This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Thanks for coming here this week and listening to another episode of this podcast. We appreciate you coming back week to week. We also thank you very much for helping to spread the word by telling your friends and other magicians you know to come back and take a listen to this. And also thank you very much for what you do and going out and helping to give us a 5-star review on iTunes, as well as your positive comments. They've been really great and really do help move this podcast up. We have been really killing it. We've been really moving up in the rankings, certainly around the world, because of the comments that you have, the kind comments that you've been giving us. So I want to thank each and every one of you very much for all that you have done. Thank you also to the Friends of the Magic Word, and I haven't mentioned this in a few weeks, and so I thought it's important, just as a reminder, we could use your financial support. Times are always tough, but I want to encourage you, if you enjoy this podcast, it should be worth at least buying me a cup of coffee each month. It wouldn't cost much. If you can just give us a $5 minimum donation, just go to patreon.com/themagicwordpodcast or go to themagicwordpodcast.com. You'll see different ways how you can become a friend of the Magic Word and what you need to do, whether you donate one time or whether you do that on an ongoing basis. If you could pledge something, if you do make a pledge, there are some pretty cool perks you get along the way, and that's all explained over there on Patreon. But again, if you are receiving some value from what I've been doing for these last 10 years, golly, I think here, in fact, this month we will be celebrating our 10th year anniversary, and we've had well over 600 episodes, and if you've enjoyed it, again, if you have the financial ability to do so, it would be wonderful. If you could help defray some of our production costs, our hardware and software, our domain charges, our monthly ongoing bills that we have with keeping this podcast up and going, your financial help will be greatly appreciated. But we also, again, appreciate you coming back and listening and for telling other people and also for just spreading the good word by giving us a 5-star reviews with nice comments. Well, I'm going to move along and introduce you to this week's guest. I am not going to give you too much of an introduction here because it would be superfluous and redundant if I were to repeat what I'm about to say whenever I'm starting this introduction. So let me just say that from Las Vegas, please welcome award-winning magician who trots the globe with his magic, and not just dove magic. He does classic illusions and cardistry, sleight of hand as well. Please welcome Mr. Jason Byrne here on The Magic Word. Today, I have someone coming to us from Las Vegas, and in fact, he has won many awards, one of them, in fact, being there in Las Vegas, where he won the Golden Lion's Head Award that was presented by Siegfried and Roy some time ago. He's also 2 years, he said in a row, that he was voted as the Stage Magician of the Year by the Academy of Magical Arts from the Magic Castle. He has done a lot of touring road shows in Canada and New Zealand and South America. And he is also really gaining a lot of international attention. And he has also performed then in London Palladium, the Lido in Paris, the Winter Garden in Berlin, and Shinagawa Prince Hotel in Tokyo, Japan. I've not even visited there, let alone ever performed there. I think that's pretty cool. No stranger, really, to the City of Lights in Las Vegas. He's appeared in many shows there, including at the Riviera, at the Folies Bergères, at the Tropicana, and the Ultimate Variety Show, V, and also at the Planet Hollywood's Hotel and Casino, has been in several reviews and different shows, and perhaps you may have seen him a time or two at different magic conventions. And of course, from time to time that he is even seen out to sea whenever that he's performing for some luxury cruise lines and everything. So please welcome my friend here today, Mr. Jason Byrne. Hey there, Jason.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
Fantastic. So glad to have you on here today. Thanks for being available. I was most of what you are really known for is doing a lot of bird acts. And I wanted to jump in there real quickly, about birds and working with them. I remember working with Amos Lekovich some time ago, and he had a lot of doves that he would travel with. And when I worked with him here at the Magic Island, did you come here to Magic Island? Didn't you work here? I was thinking that's where I think that we had first met back years and years ago, back in the 80s, it may have been even. so far back then. But I remember him carrying his birds also. And at the time, were you still working with your large, is it the macaw or parrots or?
When I worked Magic Island there, I want to say that I just had the doves, and I might have done, because there was repeated performances there, different weeks. I did it a few times.
Right.
I'm not sure if I had a duck with me when I went there or not. I may not have.
Well, I remember, of course, Valentino performing with the ducks, and then he would split the ducks, and he was quite popular with the ladies back then at the Magic Island then also. Now when I said macaws, is it macaws or what kind of large birds actually is it?
I've just got one parrot. It's a blue and gold macaw.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. And pictures that I've seen of you also then that have been some promo photos of working with yellow doves. Do you color the doves? Obviously, they don't come that way. I mean, and is that something that you still do or used to do? Or?
Well, it's funny that you ask. I often tell people when they say, how are you? I've never seen yellow doves before. And I tell them I feed them lots of lemonade. but I prefer the word tint over color. It's not toxic food coloring. I've been doing that for what seems like 20 years. And I think I've not wanted to be having to go through that process every 3 months. So it's been on my agenda to discontinue the yellow and just go with natural white doves. And, during this pandemic, I've not recolored them. Everybody's white. And, I've got a secondary set of props that are white and not yellow. And so the game plan is to go white, here on out.
Right. Did you find that the tinted or the different colored doves maybe draw more attention? Was that kind of the idea of having, because as far as your backdrop, sometimes you might have a blue backdrop or a black one or something, and white, of course, pops on that. But if you have yellow, that's something that's a little bit more attention getting. Was that kind of like a gimmick that you were thinking?
It was a bit of a gimmick, yes. There were fellas that were doing multicolored doves, different doves that were different colors. And then there was the guys that were doing white, and I thought it'd be different to just maybe do one solid color, and I chose yellow because it was like white, but with color, it did pop against the black and dark blues.
And I know parrots also live for a lot longer than doves. So is that the same parrot that you've had for a long time?
Yes, she's 25 years old plus.
25. Wow. What's her name?
Her name is Dee Dee. Yeah. I've named her after my great aunt.
Oh, I was going to ask where the name Dee Dee had come from, your great aunt. Did you live in Canada? You're from Canada originally?
Originally from Windsor, Ontario, across from Detroit. Yes.
Yeah. Because early on in your career, you had worked with
Greg Fruin.
The two of you kind of had wasn't Siegfried and Roy. I mean, you had your own kind of personalities and things that you were doing. But he's still up in Canada over there in Niagara, as I understand.
He's up in Niagara Falls doing very well.
Right. Right. You still see him from time to time?
I popped in there once. I had a chance to, I was visiting my sister in Toronto, and I went up, we went to Niagara Falls, and we decided to go see Greg's show, and he was a very gracious host. And
yeah.
Terrific job.
Now, when you're working on cruise ships, do you have problems with doves? I've often wondered about that. I've heard other guys when they're working ships, particularly with livestock, there are different restrictions when you come into a country with livestock, that you have to quarantine them for a while before that you can then go out and perform. And some people will send doves to different islands where they're going to be, so that way they'll pick them up and they've been quarantined long enough. Or, you know, how have you handled that on ships?
Well, I did that in the beginning, in, you know, 2000, early 2000, 2001, 2002, was doing all of that hoop jumping, if you will, lots of paperwork. And it just, it wasn't much fun. It was very expensive. And for the past 10 years, I haven't used livestock on the ships.
At all.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Hmm. Just to avoid all of that paperwork and having to care for them. The last number of jobs that I've done on the ships is what they call fly on. You know, you go on there, you do the shows and you get off the next day. You're not residing on the ship. And so you would have to be relying on other staff or other performers to be attending to those animals. I didn't want to have that, be putting that up upon other people, nor did the ships really want that stuff going on. You know, they don't want livestock on there. It's changed. The business of traveling with animals is just, it's gotten so difficult that most that I know of don't do it very much.
That was going to be my next question. I was curious as to whether that many people, the magicians, I should say, are actually performing on ships with livestock. I mean, I think Greg Gleason may have traveled with some animals. I'm not sure, but I think he may have. And some other guys have had wild animals, and I'm sure that they've got restrictions against that kind of thing now.
They increase every year, these restrictions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so eventually you're probably not even going to have a mouse or a gerbil that you can take and perform with, I would think. And that was kind of what was going to lead me over there to talk about some of the cardistry types of things that you do, because as I understand it, that you do a lot of cardistry then now, and kind of known for that kind of a thing, as opposed to just sleight of hand, but I mean, just really fancy finger flicking. Is that something that you've really been working on quite a bit here recently?
Yeah, it's always, I've always got a deck of cards in the van, and, practicing, various sorts of fans and, one-handed cuts and, that sort of stuff. And, I finally did get some card manip back up on the stage, back in 2017. It had been, over a dozen years since I'd done any, kind of sleight of hand, with playing cards up on the stage. So it was good to get back. Now, I really do love it. It's obviously very difficult to do, especially when the conditions, the temperatures aren't favorable, you know.
The humidity, I think it'd be horrible when you're trying to do some back palming or whatever, yeah.
So I've limited, when I put together that routine, I really tried to limit the difficulty level. Tried to just keep it short and keep it moving and have a nice variety of effects instead of simply all production. In fact, there is very little back palming on that routine.
How long is your card routine?
I want to say that was about 3.5 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's sort of, once the stage portion is finished, it flows into a close-up portion into the audience on a close-up table in the audience. I was performing that magnetic hand. You display, yeah, a pile of cards, you put your hand on top, and it suspends to the right. Under your hand, snap your fingers, they all drop. I was performing that.
Mm-hmm.
Really like that.
Were you using that with an iMag, I guess? I mean, an image, yes, magnifier, large,
yes,
screen?
Yeah, most of these ships have video walls these days, side projection, rear view projection.
Have you found that the ship's passengers enjoy your close-up or watching close-up more or less than seeing actually a stage act?
Well, I don't know. I was hired to do a stage show, and I pretty much did a stage show with, you know, that was like the only close-up trick in there.
Yeah.
That I was doing.
I mean, I know several other guys, you know, Sean Farquhar and others who do large stage shows, but also will do things with an image magnifier and same thing. I mean, even at Rick Wilcox's show up in the Dells in Wisconsin, that he does close up and he's got a big screen and everything. So he brings an audience member and they kind of interact with them on the stage, and he can actually do some close up with them then as well. So it shows good variety, I think, for a magician to be able to do close up as well as stage types of stuff. Is there one that you prefer really over the other?
I like it all. Yeah, it's difficult to pick one over the other. It's like apples and oranges, really. Yeah, I like all.
You ever tried dipping your foot into the world of mentalism?
I love mentalism. There's some amazing stuff going on out there these days. I saw a guy called Scott Sylvan out of Scotland do one of these Zoom shows. It was terrific. Very innovative, lots of amazing projection he was using. I really like what he was doing. But in that stage show that I did on the ship, I did one prediction. You know, it was one prediction. I just really like to try to keep the variety instead of just a whole big chunk of mentalism, let's say, you know.
Right.
I was using, I want to say, Harry Anderson's Mismatch card.
I love that.
I really like it, you know.
That plays well. I would think that'd play well because you're talking about a giant jumbo, not jumbo, but really a giant card.
Yeah, giant card. So very visual from, you know, 1,000-seat-plus theaters that they have you in here sometimes.
Yeah. That's a good idea, a good suggestion for large groups. That's a card trick that goes over for that size of a group.
And I just love the visual force.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when you're doing that on cruises, do you have three or four different acts that you do in a week, or are you going from ship to ship? Are you staying on the same ship and then you do two or three?
Every ship is different. They all require different things from who they're hiring. For several years, I did a ship where you were doing two big shows and then a lounge show in the back later that night. So three shows in one night. I can't say that it's a lot of fun doing that many shows in a short period of time. Everything's rush, rush, rush. It's hard enough doing two big shows.
I would think so. And when you're saying big shows, are you doing large illusions aside from the Doves?
Yes. Yeah. That's
what I was going to say. And how many assistants do you bring with you, or do you enlist the aid of the dancers on the ship?
Often you're using the help of people pre-existing on the ship, and they're helping juggle their schedules to help with you. You often just pay these assistants on the side. Other engagements, you know, it was – the cruise line was paying the salaries of the dancers, and part of the requirement was to be helping with this extra show that came on. So it varies. It varies. A lot of magicians bring on their assistant, and I did plenty of that too. I really like just going out there solo, working with their people. And
is it a little bit cheaper actually if you're using their help as opposed to bringing your own? Because you're obviously that comfort level of an assistant
it's cheaper. I think you're right. You know, that it would be more expensive to be having someone travel alongside you. Just that travel expense alone. Now you're talking an extra cabin, even if you're not a couple,
right?
So it makes total sense just to try to, you know, find some onboard help.
Well, and the onboard help, I would think, would be pretty darn good, because when I've been on ships and the people that I've dealt with are dancers and singers who have been classically trained and they have theater experience from college. They're usually college graduates and they're working on the ship for a year. And if they're not actually rehearsing for their own shows in the evenings, they're calling bingo or they're being a server in the bar or something. And so I think that they would jump at the chance of being able to help a magician, because it kind of helps broaden everything that they're going to be able to perform there on their resume, as well as something that they really want to do. They want to dance and be on the stage rather than calling bingo and shuffleboard and all that.
Yeah, and it's not going to hurt making a couple extra bucks, right?
Exactly, right. That'd be something a little bit extra then, too, that they're going to, and who knows? You know, I know a lot of guys have met their wives on ships who have been dancers or singers and and that kind of a thing, you know, then, too. But you've been in Vegas now for 25 years or so?
Close, over 20 years, yes. Mm-hmm. I want to say 22 years here total, yeah.
And I know that you worked a variety of shows, but most of them have been there. Have you? I guess you've been over to Reno and wherever else.
A little bit, Atlantic City, some. Yeah, I like it over there on the East Coast, the boardwalk, the beach.
Have you ever worked for an Indian casino?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Is that what, Foxwoods, I guess, out in Connecticut or someplace?
I didn't do that one. I haven't done that one yet. I hope to. I hope to one day.
Yeah. Okay. I just wondered if they were different in any way, and if so, how, as far as management goes, or their expectations and what they wanted you to do in the contracts, as opposed to a Vegas casino.
Well, I do think that Vegas, has a certain kind of mentality. I'm not going to say that the standards are lower outside of town here, but when you think of Vegas, you know, you think of the wow factor. And I haven't done my own show here, other than a night at the a nearby library, working on some new material. It's highly competitive here. It's very expensive to be trying to do your own show. It's very much pay to play here, and stiff competition here. My product, it really lends itself more for something like the cruise market or resort somewhere. Maybe one day we'll get a chance here, but I'm quite happy just playing a specialty act in someone else's show and having them worry about ticket sales and
right
filling seats and doing all of that advertising, marketing. I like to just walk in, do my thing, and then go home.
Yeah, I think it'd be particularly difficult for someone to four-wall that, because you have all these other things you have to worry about, and covering your nut and selling the seats and advertising and everything else. Even if you have some other people helping you to do that, that's going to be less money than is coming in for you as far as gross profit goes. You got that right. If you kind of work in as a part of a variety show of something else, where there's someone else is actually putting the thing together and they are the ones who are trying to sell a seat, you just do what you're best at, you know?
Well, and what's really great about doing what I've been doing for the past 18 years is practically coming and going as you please, with the understanding that you're not going to do another gig full time. But anything that's kind of short time, I was flying off across the country, getting on the ships, do the show, come back and do the weekends here in town. It was just terrific.
Well, when you do those kinds of things, in other words, that you do have a contract for a variety show. What kind of flexibility do you have to be able to go and do a ship, or to go run off and to do a corporate job, or those kinds of things? Do you have to have someone to fill in for you? And then do you worry, oh, that guy might take my job, or do they just do without you? Or
what happens here is the show's running 7 days a week, so they do have an overflow of acts should people get hurt or injured or sick or have to, you know, emergency leave. So there's plenty of acts to fill in, and they just, you know, pull from that roster. They have a couple of jugglers in this variety show. There's a hula hoop artist, roller skaters, knife throwing, crossbow act, comedy acts, gaucho act,
Well, it I know on cruise ships, of course, that there are comment cards that you live and die by, of course. Do they have anything like that in a variety show? I know in a magic show, when you're four-walling it, you know, you would know immediately of whether the people are coming and putting butts in seats. But in a variety show, if they're coming in to see you or that kind of a thing, would that be, is that something that they notify you? I mean, as far as the producer, do they get some sort of comment cards?
Practice comment cards where I'm at. You know, I've seldom seen that here in town.
Okay.
I mean, people are reacting online, you know, Yelp.
Yeah. Facebook, TripAdvisor.
Right. Exactly. So that's where people are getting information.
Right. Right. Are you constantly also working on new material? I mean, I guess you kind of keep your ear to the ground. You kind of hear what's new and magic. Are you trying to keep on cutting edge, or you kind of feel as if that, hey, I've got an act and I'm going to do that till I die?
No, I'm very much a big believer of new material, developing new material. I'm always working on something. Often magic seems to be getting the back burner. But because of everyday life and whatnot. But yeah, I'm always working on stuff. I think it's possible to keep up, have your thumb on the pulse of what's really happening out there. There's just so much being put out,
right.
You know, so much material that's coming out on a daily basis.
It really is. And in that case, are you looking at things that, I was going to say interest you. I know there are a lot of close-up things that come out literally daily, but I wouldn't think that there are a lot of new illusions that are coming out, new and original illusions, and maybe not very many stand-up routines or things that you might incorporate in your act. So do you kind of sit and work with some brain trusts and kind of come up with some different ideas for different illusions, or are you kind of talking with some of the local builders and say, what have you got? What's new or what?
A little bit of every, all of that. Trying to develop a new illusion is often very expensive, more expensive than buying something that's, you know, tried and true. And there's always risk that may not work out for whatever reason. I've stuck with a lot of classics, big believer in the classics. Like plenty of that new stuff going on out there. I've always felt that Franz Ferrari was a, you know, an innovative illusion inventor and designer, and Jim Steinmeier and Don Wayne, you know, those lots of people like that. I've invested into some modern illusions. I can't say that I've really invented anything myself. I've always tried to put my stamp on whatever it is that I'm you know, attempting to put together and interested in performing.
And when you're doing that, do you talk to an assistant and say, hey, I've got an idea over here that I'd like to put you in this box or to have you do something? I mean, how much of the creative process comes from the assistant's input is kind of where I'm going.
I've gotten some very good input from some of the assistants and dancers. But often I'm working with a director, you know, a choreographer. There'll be a game plan in advance. I have some consultant type of friends that I'm always trying to get feedback from, and those who I trust.
Yeah. That's a great idea, because too many magicians, I believe, try to do it all. And particularly, as we were talking about earlier, if you're four-walling it, that you're having to worry about all these other things, quite literally worrying about putting butts in seats and trying to cover that nut and everything. And where do you advertise? Where's the best place to put your money to get the best return, your ROI? Yeah, you have a lot of things. So it's great that you are doing it the right way, where you're going to outside people, that is producers and directors, and having someone to actually look at the show and to give you advice to kind of make this a good, tight, entertaining show. Because if you're just looking at it through your own eyes, you might say, ah, that's great. But then it's really not, because a lot of times we're not always honest with ourselves. I'm not saying you particularly, I'm just saying magicians in general, myself included. I'm trying to come up with different ideas. I want to go back again just for a moment to doves, because that you've been doing them for so long. And I know that people like David Oliver, who had been doing doves, and he had problems with, I don't remember what that was called, but he had dove dust in his lungs and basically had to have a lung transplant. And I know that there are others who have had issues with that. Do you keep your doves where that you live with them? Do you have an outside coop, or how do you keep from developing ailments related to doves?
I am keeping the doves. They're in the garage with a swamp cooler through the summer. And then they pretty much reside throughout the year in the garage. But I'm also taking those birds outside every day. Every day that's nice, they're coming outside. I've got these cages that are stacked upon one another, and they're on dollies so they can wheel out quickly. And there is a bigger outdoor coop that I can put some birds out there that have even got a little more space than their housing cages.
How many doves do you have right now?
I would say less than, they're very close to a dozen, I bet, I've got. Yeah.
You try to keep about that same amount? I mean, I know that they're reproducing all the time.
Yeah, sometimes you end up having a few more, and sometimes a few less. And when you're down a few, you're on the hunt and trying to find some new young ones.
So you don't breed your own?
No, I'm not breeding my own. That's a whole other game.
Well, I wondered about that, because when I had doves, my wife used to, she would say, do weekly abortions. She would take the eggs and just throw them against the fence, you know, because they're always laying eggs. And I don't know whether that they actually were fertile or not, but they were laying eggs. And I guess I was just guessing that if we would have let them set on the eggs, they would have grown and we would have had some more doves. We didn't need more doves. And so that's why I was wondering, is it that easy, or do you have to actually go out to
fly pretty easily and pretty quickly? But there's all sorts of, you know, issues that you encounter with dove breeding. You could end up with, baby birds dying, crippled leg. You really want to have the right kind of nesting material and nest, shape of nest. But there's no guarantee of, perfectly healthy young baby. There's always some small risk, but for the most part, those breeders, I just play it safe, buy it from the breeder, buy it from a seller, try to get the young ones, so they're trainable. Hard to train an old bird new tricks.
Yeah. How long do you spend then actually with a dove to train it to come back to your perch or your finger or whatever?
Yeah. Well, in the beginning, you're spending more time getting them accustomed to that routine than you are once they know that routine.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm getting some new birds, I'm often practicing working with them for short periods, multiple times a day. That ends up going down to, twice a day and then once a day, one session, and those sessions are not long after once they are flying out and coming back, you can do a session within, 10 minutes.
I remember years ago when Lance Burton had won the gold medal at the IBM. And at that time he was, that he rehearsed in the theater of tossing the doves into the spotlight and letting them come back and perch on his street lamp, basically street light and sign. And just was taking a lot of time in doing that, because I'm sure that he had that down already and practiced at home and wherever else. But when you're in a larger theater and the birds are under lights, that's a different situation, actual casino. So my question is, how do you rehearse with your doves in real performing situations where they would be hit by spotlights? Because I mean, just like us, when we're standing on the stage and you're blinded, you cannot see past the front row. I would think doves be the same thing. When you release them, particularly, it's gone from dark to light. All of a sudden it's like, wow, where am I? Mm-hmm. So how do you practice or rehearse with them, and where do you go?
Well, what I'm doing is when I'm getting a new bird I'll start getting it to fly to me with, you know, full light in the garage, just from the cage to me, and we'll get that pattern going. And then they just start flying out of the cage to feed out of your hand, you know? And so you're halfway there. I do eventually get some, I've got this sort of what I call dove training room in the garage. There's black curtains that form a space that's roughly 8 feet wide by 12 feet long. There's a miniature spot, so I can get them accustomed to some spotlight only lighting environment. And then I will be taking them in some different rooms with full light, you know, such as the living room or the family room, maybe down a hallway, and do those sessions with, you know, full light TV. And now they're ready to go into a bigger space, you know, mm-hmm. space. Try to find something where the birds aren't flying up in the rafters, you know, trying to get them down with poles or genie lifts or ladders.
That's a horrible
and
thing.
And then eventually you're getting into the performance venue and, you know, wait till they're hungry, you know, and then get out.
Put them in your hand.
Yeah. And they're bound to do whatever, you know, take off, go up. Got to try to get them back down. But it's really about repetition. Once they can get in that rhythm, you'll find that, you know, a lot of those birds, they do above 95%.
What was one of the worst situations you've had where you've had a dove? You maybe rehearsed and before a show went in the rafters and the time was getting tight and you weren't able to get the dove back down before the show or had to go some other direction. Or have you got any stories like that?
Well, I think that's always happened to one of these, you know, dove performers. They're always waiting in the wings, kind of fully loaded, waiting to go on, and who knows what. But for the most part, I'm often going to work with an extra dove or two just in case. You never know. So I'm not completely empty-handed. I've got some backup tricks, you know, if the flying bird isn't going to work tonight for whatever reason, maybe I'll stick in the dove and gloves, you know, temporarily. And, you know, that's why there's an MC, you know, the MC caters to the acts, hopefully. And, hey, I gotta be stretching out there a little bit. I'm not quite ready. That's happened, you know, a few times over lots of years, but it's no big deal when it happens once a year, even, you know, which isn't even the case.
That's frustrating for the MC also. I was MCing a show in Bristol, England, and of course the dove worker was the first one out, and we were waiting for the show to begin until he was fully loaded so I could walk out and then quickly introduce him. And I hadn't been out there 30 seconds, and they came out and said stretch. It's like, I guess a dove got loose or something happened. It's like, really? So it was like, I don't know. It felt like an hour, but it's probably only 5 minutes that I had to wait and stretch before that he was actually able to come out. But have you ever had a problem where a dove has actually died when you produce it or during your production, or it doesn't roost like it should?
I've had a bird die in a performance before. Yeah. Can't say that happens often.
No, that's horrible when it does. I mean, not much you can do.
Really, really kind of throws you for a loop in some way psychologically, just trying to get through the rest of the set.
Right. Well, because another thing is, of course, that the dove is more than a pet. I mean, it's something that it's an assistant, a fellow assistant that you've been working with for a long time. It's like, oh my gosh. I mean, you got to take a moment, I would think, but the music's still playing. You got to keep going. I've never had one who had died on me, but I did have one that was laying an egg. It was funny because it was on the perch and they kept flying off the perch to set on the ground. And I kept picking it up and putting it on, and I was producing other doves and whatnot. And then at the end, I was doing a flip over vanish and it disappeared. And then whenever I was unloading back in the behind the curtain, open it up, and it's like that she just laid an egg. And so she was just looking for some place she was ready to pop, I guess, at any time.
I've had them pop an egg on stage.
On stage?
Oh, yeah.
More than once. Like when they're on the perch, it's like they drop a real egg.
Yeah, right.
Wow. All you can do is kind of shrug and say, hey, what do you do, folks? Yeah, when life gives you lemons that you have a broken egg, I guess, in that case. So, again, when we were talking about working the Magic Island over here with doves, why did you decide to branch out then and have the larger parrot?
Just because it was just so spectacular. You know, I started with the duck before I into the parrot. I was working with some Pekings, and they were nice and cheap. And you could get them in various places, you know, in a foreign country, you could locate one and get one for some shows, a TV show or a tour. Mm-hmm. I've used some ducks. I like the what they call bantam or call duck. They're much smaller than a Peking. They look like a Peking, but they're a quarter of the size, and they're very cute looking. They're a little tricky to find, sort of like a duck that they use often in show competitions, fair competitions for poultry. They're
about the size of a chicken?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Hmm. Yeah, because I always think of a duck of just being like a mallard or something. It's pretty big thing, you know.
Yeah, well, the Pekings are considered mallards, and they discharge a lot of mess.
Yeah, that's a problem.
You've got to be constantly cleaning up and whatnot, and have a facility for that, and that's tricky on the road.
Well, that would lead me to, you're right, being on the road and traveling. When I have, there are hotels, obviously, that won't allow animals. You can't even bring a dog in unless it's a service animal or something, let alone bringing in livestock like that. Do you smuggle them in or just not tell them and just check in, or do you ask them beforehand?
Yeah, there's been plenty of sneaking men through my career, but we try to find places that are, you know, accommodate animals.
What about traveling with them, like on airplanes? I assume you put them underneath. Seems like I remember hearing stories like Johnny Thompson would travel with the doves already loaded, you know, while he was seated. But those are days gone by.
You can't do that anymore.
No.
You know, you risk, one, missing your flight for sure. You know, if they find doing that. Because I'd done that before. Heard the stories and was doing that early on. Put them on, go through the metal detectors through security and take them out on the plane in the bathroom or whatever. And they could go in the overhead compartment. And sometimes you would check them below as extra bag. I never really liked doing that because they were out of my possession. And I liked always having them with me. But there was a period of a dozen or more years where we were globetrotting all over, putting birds up in the overhead compartment.
And would they coo, or was it because it was dark and they didn't coo?
Often it's dark, so it would be dark, so they would not coo, but you know, sometimes there would be, and you know, there's certainly some smiles and flight attendants that were mystified of where's that coming from and what is that?
That's what I would think, is that some of the passengers saying, are we flying so slow and are the windows so thin we can hear birds through the outside?
Luckily, you've got music playing as you enter the plane often, and there is stuff running, like AC is running. There is an ambient noise. So it would be difficult. You'd have to know, you know, almost.
Yeah. Wow. And so obviously now when you're traveling, we can't do that. So you are leaving them outside your control and you have to let them be shipped underneath with the rest of the luggage.
Yeah. Or you send them through what they call cargo, how you would ship illusions. Show up the cargo facility and fill out paperwork, and I've got to supply them with the right kind of carriers. Then everything's up to their standards, and you know, those standards and conditions are changing every year. You know,
have you ever had a situation where your illusions or your livestock didn't show up on the other end?
Yes, there's been, on a rare occasion, missing piece of equipment, stuff coming late. There was a series of shows in France where the birds arrived more than one day late. And unfortunately, you know, they end up docking the money.
Oh, really? Because they were paying for that show and that show didn't show up. So they docked you.
That's right. That's right.
Not much you can do about that, I guess. Did you just cut your show short or try to do something else or?
Well, there was, you know, the others performed that day, but I didn't. I sat on the sidelines.
Oh, because it was basically the bulk of your show. And so, yeah I see what they're saying. Yeah. If you were supposed to be coming in and performing Doves, for an example, the Doves don't show up, there's not much you could do, I guess. Right. Or if you're coming in to do a zigzag and that doesn't make it, it's like, okay, well, I can't perform. Huh. That would be a difficult situation, certainly showing up, which is the advantage, I guess, of being a mentalist, in which you're just going to show up with a clipboard. Right. Or as Max Maven had said, you know, nothing. You can do a show, you know, basically, and go into performing however. So when you're doing some of your illusions, and also, do you do very much of a talking act anymore?
Yeah, plenty of talking. It's what helps fill the time. You can, you know, musical magic, it goes by so quick that it's, you know, a challenge to fill up, you know, 30, 45 minutes.
That's true. And in trying to find the right music, you don't have problems with ASCAP or with copyrighted music whenever that you're performing someplace because they're supposed to have the license, I think, when you perform. Is that right?
Often, right. I'm not playing the producer per se. You should hopefully covered under the ship, whatever the ship is paying. The ship is, those cruise lines are paying those music companies somehow, you know, ASCAP
or something. Likewise, I assume in Vegas, like with the variety shows, that they too are paying.
That's right.
But if you're doing just a four wall on your own, you're kind of responsible for that as well.
Technically, you would be as a producer,
mm-hmm.
But maybe you can get under the venue because the venue these days is often renting out the time slot, not just a day. You've got the venue for 2 hours. Hey, you're out of here. The next show's in. You know, shows every 2 hours, different shows. A lot of these venues. So the venue may have something.
Right. What venue have you performed that is one of your favorites? You talked about being in France and Tokyo and around the world, as well as in Vegas and different casinos around there. Has there been a show that you've been involved with or a location that you favored one over the other?
Well, most of these cruise lines have state-of-the-art theaters these days, unless you're working a ship that's, you know, 30 years old. A lot of these ships are superior to Las Vegas stages, but you know, there's been some nice stages here in Vegas, like you said, the Riv here, Tropicana, landmark venues. Did one night over there, Lance Burton, when he was doing a charity show. That was a fabulous venue. Winter Garden in Berlin was a nice place to be doing shows.
Was there any kind of translation issue as far as, like, in, let's say, Tokyo or in Germany, where that you've had any language barriers? Again, you're doing just a non-talking act with some illusions or Doves or whatever, but as far as working with the tech personnel, spotlight crew, and all the rest,
they speak some English. Often there's a translator. So it takes a little longer in a foreign country usually.
Yeah. But it sounds like that the Winter Garden was just a lot of fun.
Oh, it was terrific. Terrific.
Speaking of the Winter Garden, I was just thinking of that in Blackpool, England. Have you ever performed at Blackpool?
No, I'd like to. I'd like to go there. It's a renowned magic convention.
Thousands and thousands, but you're bigger than FISM. I know that of the accolades that you have received, have you competed in FISM?
No.
Okay.
No, never. Never was able to get over there, really.
Okay. I didn't know, but have you attended a FISM in the past just as
a magician? No, I have not. No, I was hoping to maybe look into the one that was going to be in Quebec in Canada.
Right.
Being in North America, I think it would be, the closest distance.
That's so true. And being originally from Canada, do you speak a little French?
Oui, je parle français.
That's more than I do. I don't know what you just said, but other than yes.
Yeah. Went to a French grade school in high school.
Okay. That's kind of what I thought perhaps. And I'm registered for Quebec as well, whenever that's going to be. Hopefully be able to attend that maybe in next year, 22 or something.
Are there any updates?
Not that I've heard. What's happened is that they have actually held back a little bit because they wanted to have the championships. There are FISM has changed a lot from the way that it used to be. I had an episode some time ago and talking with different people who are judges on the jury to find out how that you actually move on through. I mean, right now, you are not just recommended, or you don't have to have won just a local convention or something, and then you're put forth. You have these different round robin kind of things. I mean, you have to win at certain areas and then win the next one or something before that you go forward. And so they have these national championships before they have the international championships. So the way to the top has changed dramatically. My point being is that has been postponed, and I think now until 22. So that way they can have those preliminaries, if you will, leading up to the actual international competition, but it's still planned for Quebec at this point. So that's going to be coming up then soon. So anything in the near future that you're actually working on or that you're planning to perform? I know that you had worked with V in some other shows. Are there some things that you are looking at doing then right now, maybe of adding some new illusions to your show or new tricks or something?
Always working on new material. So I've been working on making some changes to the Dove Act. I'd like to try to dust off the card routine and get that rehearsing. But nothing on the agenda with everything shut down here still, really.
Yeah. Do you listen to music all the time and try to find new bits of business and new musical pieces that can fit to your routine and keep it updated?
Been collecting my own library for many years, I think, as most magicians do. You know, they hear something, put it in the library. You know, don't know when you'll use it, but when you're looking for music, you can go to your library and see what if there's anything that's fitting. But I'm always keeping my ears out on the radio, and television commercials are a great source, I think, to find some neat music. And there are various royalty-free website places. And it's not like it used to be going into the record store and you were lucky to be, testing out the vinyl. Or testing out the CD.
I don't think many people understand, first of all, what we're talking about when we talk about vinyl or even CDs nowadays of the generation. But and even further back, as you said, that you could actually go in and say, can I listen to this first before I purchase it?
That's right.
And they'll take it out of the sleeve and spin it and go into a little studio with headphones, and you could actually listen to the album before you bought it.
Right. I remember going into the music store in Los Angeles and spend, maybe a couple hours there on a headset trying to find something, find stuff. You know?
When I bought a Subtrunk, I spent, I think, 2, maybe 3 years before I first performed it. And it wasn't just from rehearsal, because I had rehearsed it, but I couldn't find the right routine and the right music that seem to work and drive the story that I was wanting to tell or to do with that. And it took a long time, but it's one of those things that when you hear it and it hits you, it's like, that's it. And who knows, that inspiration could come, as you say, listening to the radio, just in passing somewhere. You might be on the elevators thinking, wait a minute, what is this playing? This is a familiar tune or whatever.
Movies and TV shows these days, these TV shows are like movies. They're like short films. So they're constantly using soundtracks or wonderful resource for finding music too.
That's a very good point. Certainly with the soundtracks from different music or other different films that can set the right tone, whether you want it to be exciting or kind of a little bit more mellow or romantic or whatever it is, that a lot of times people don't listen to the music in the background. I recently had attended the Houston Symphony's production of Star Wars. And so they were playing that on the big screen, and then the symphony was playing the music under that. So it was just the soundtrack of the voice and the movie that we were seeing, the film, and all of the music from the soundtrack had been stripped away. So it had been done live. But before they began, the conductor was saying, I want you to remember that we're actually doing this live, because you're going to get so wrapped up in the movie, you'll forget we're actually down here with the violins and the horns and everything else. And mm-hmm. So it's that kind of a thing that a lot of times you don't listen to the music. And I think that we should, particularly if you're trying to find some the right music for your act or for a routine or whatever it is, to listen to the underlying themes as you're watching a film, not just because the music's what really helps drive the content of the film. So just one of those things I think to listen to. Well, listen, I appreciate your time. It's just really kind of zipped by over here. I wanted to ask you last question then also, Jason. The name of the podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. And I always like to close by asking my guests what it is that is their magic word or phrase. What is it that is something that you live by? What's important to you? What is it that drives you, I guess?
I got this phrase from my friend Scott Rawlings ages and ages ago when he had me under his wing, and the catchphrase is, may the magic be with you.
May the magic be with you. You sound like Obi-Wan. May the force be with you. Very wise words. Thank you very much, Jason. That's been great. I appreciate you being a guest here on this week's episode.
Thank you. Thank you, Scott.
You bet. It's over the Magic Word Podcast. That was Jason Byrne. This is Scotty out. Thank you, Jason, for being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast. I appreciate you sharing your wisdom and your experiences and stories in this week's episode. A lot of fun. Great catching up with you, and good luck in the future with all of your endeavors then as well. Well, I want to thank all of you listeners again for tuning in this week, and also I want to suggest, if you would please, to subscribe to our pod letter. If you just go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you'll see a little pop-up where you can subscribe to the pod letter, and you can keep up with what's happening each week, and also who's going to be coming up in following weeks, and also from time to time we have contests, and there you will be the first to learn about these contests we have through our pod letter. Also, if you would please, if you're going to be ordering something from Amazon, I've mentioned this before, but I know it's something that you don't always have the front of your mind, but if you go to the bottom of themagicwordpodcast.com, to the bottom of each of the pages, there is a graphic that says Amazon affiliate. If you click on that, that will take you to your account on Amazon, and then anything you order, we are an affiliate, and we get a little bit of a very small percentage, a few pennies back on every one of your purchases. So appreciate you helping to support us that way. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to us at the YouTube channel at youtube.com/Texas Magician. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and may the magic be with you. This is Scotty out.